Bert Harwood, Reel 5. You were saying with the jungle training that it was giving you an insight into what conditions might be like later on?
I don't know whether we got down to training with mules at that particular time, but eventually we went on to mule transport because we've been in the fifth and we'd done a lot of tracking around the back of the chaps, and we were, most of our transport at that stage was mules. We had our own mule section, and I think at that particular time they formed a mule section and people were trained to go with the mules on what have you. And of course we were also then got down to the weight of what a mule could carry, like say 10 blankets, 5 blankets each side of a mule, or 2-3 boxes of ammunition. I can't remember the exact what name, but the actual loads of the mules had to be loaded equal sides of a mule so that it would ride quite easy. And that was one of the sort of training periods we got. Later on, big packs were all taken by mules or what have you, so that we travelled with just our own light haversack for a while.
Was there any specialist kind of training you got in the jungle? Was there any special tactical or unit movements that you would do within a jungle that you'd done before? Or?
No. We were issued with different... Well, I think we had one or two new weapons come, and Bren gun carriers came. But there's nothing extraordinary because we still had the old the Enfield 303 rifle. Their actual status was still the same.
Who's instructing you about jungle training?
Nobody outside the what name, we just picked it up as now. No, I can't remember anybody specially training us. We just march up and bivouac. No normal training, trying to hide yourself up. There was one time we used to cut the old bamboo down and make the sticks, you know, so you put them in front of you to stop. And instead of barbed wire, which you'd have in the desert or whatever, we used bamboo canes to stick up.
Is that pungy sticks? Do they call them pungy sticks? Is it a small, sharpened bamboo?
That's right, yeah, yeah. All sorts of training like that. But really, it was just a case of keeping your eyes open. And,
Had you been issued with your jungle green
no.
at that stage? You no. were still in your...
Still in the khaki stuff. I think at some time or other, but it wasn't then, not the training time, but I think later on, there was an issue of sort of a canvas shoe, which instead of your army boots, you was a little bit more quieter travelling, but it didn't really make a lot of difference because you tread on a twig or anything. I mean, whether you've got boots on or not, it still makes a noise.
Was there an emphasis then on your training in the need to be quiet within the jungle environment?
Oh, yeah. The patrols and that you went out with your men in, you sent out your front runner and then the next one, and then your section came along, whereas in a desert, I mean, you couldn't do that. I mean, you're all in a boat, whatever. But you used to keep your distance, and you were always prepared to disappear if anything did happen, or, you know. And that's the sort of training that we were supposed to have done. But getting back to that, all I'm saying is that it was basic training to look after yourself in the jungle.
And you felt that was good preparation for what was to come?
Yeah.
So what happened after you'd finished your training?
Well, we eventually went up to Chittagong, and that was a bit of a journey. I think we went to Calcutta by train, and we did go to Calcutta because we had a couple of days leave there, and a couple of our officers had already been sent ahead to form a sort of a leave centre. And funny enough, one of them, he wasn't a major then, but he was Lieutenant Coath. He actually finished up my company commander. But he was sent with another one to Calcutta, and they formed a sort of a leave centre in Calcutta. And by the time we came out of our training, this was in just going, you know, they just got it going. And I went there and had a couple of days. And I remember going and see Esther Williams. Is it Esther Williams of swimming? I went to see her twice in the cinema, 2 days running, because there's nothing else to do. But no, and Calcutta was not a very good place, as far as I was concerned. All the beggars and on the streets and that. And actual fact, I was pleased to get back to the battalion.
Did you have much contact with Indian civilians at that time?
Not really. There was civilians actually running a leave centre. We're dealing with them. And I mean, a lot of them, they speak English anyway, because of it's a British colony, wasn't it? But on the whole, you get the old child, well, I come round, certainly, you know, cups of tea and what have you. And the Dobie Wallace, your washing, they come and get your washing if you were there long enough. And funny enough, I had a little stay in Calcutta later on, and I had the Dobie, and they'd done a really good job. All I had, funny how it all comes back around. But from there, we were trained on another train up towards Chittagong, and I think, if I'm right, the trains don't run straight in; they have to cross the river. And I think that further on, you unload your stuff, and it's taken across by boat, and you put on another train the other side up to Chittagong. But I was fortunate. Once I got the other side, I was sent on an advance party, and I went by a truck. But everybody else marched, and I think it took them about 6 days to march from wherever. And eventually we got into Chittagong, Cox's Bazaar, and all that area. And that's where we more or less started to get in contact with, not the Jats, but we weren't all that far from them. That's where we started to organise it. The 7th Division went left and we went right, and we eventually went down the coast and towards Akiab and the tunnels. And that's where and on the way down there is where we started our battles.
What was the terrain like? This is the Arakan, isn't it?
Yeah. The Arakan was fairly flat, but they had all these little hillocks that run down. Well, where we were, it wasn't too bad because it ran out to the sea, you could see. But there was these hills went up on the left-hand side. And then when you got a little bit further down, they split. And you got these little hillocks. Pipsqueak and Wilfrid, the Razabel Fortress, all the different places. And of course, the Japs had been there, what, a year or so, over the winter, and they had really dug in. And our objective was to take Akiab and the tunnels area, so they could come in with supplies at Akiab. So our division, we were going down more or less along the coast in Auntie's Hillocks. 7th Division went just the other side, and then you got the West Africans. They were in the Caledonian Valley of Death, they called it. They were, because all the disease and what have you. But that was the idea. They were all moving down. We were going to start this offensive against them.
How are you moving as you move towards the Japanese?
Walking, marching, because you only travel so far and you would then come up against an artillery. Because these fortresses, these hillocks, the Japs had been there over the winter. And it was once we'd taken them, one in particular, they dug right through. It was not a home from home, right in the middle of the... And they had that dive bomb. They'd had it bombed by Mitchell bombers. They'd shelled it and what have you. But it's still been... When you attack it, the Japs are still there. And eventually, we done the same as what they done to us. Because while we were moving down and the 7th Division, the Japs did attack the other side. And I don't know if you've heard about it, the admin box. They really cut them off. And they killed all the people in the hospital and all in the casualties there. Anyway, and they started to come around the back of us, 5th Division. But they managed to stop that. They pushed them back. And that's what we had to do in the end. We travelled at night around the back of the Japs so we would cut them off. And what would happen? They realised what we were doing and they would move off.
As you were advancing down these tracks, what did the tracks look like at that stage?
Well, just ordinary cart track you'll find in this country, but there's also... What, you know, the chongs, I don't know, dried up riverbeds. At this particular time, they were dry. And we, I remember our sea company, had to go down this chong. We went down the chong side of the track, give us a lot of cover. But it's meeting these little hills, Pips Creek and Wilfred, and as I said before, you've got to send a patrol up to find out if they're occupied. And you'd find out that they were. But there's only a trench dug round the top. And you'd only have perhaps 3 or 4 Japs. But it was enough to hold you up. So you'd harbour up. And then you'd put a few mortars down and what have you. And you'd find probably they might disappear during the night. And you'd send a patrol up in the morning. And we learnt by mistakes again. Because as soon as you've got the patrol on the top, it's under observation. And they got that lined up with mortars or whatever. And as soon as you got on the top, over comes a shell. So the object was, you find out they were there or not. If they were gone, you were straight over the top. You never hung about so that you didn't get any casualty.
Was this time consuming then to check? Each hillock?
Yeah. You couldn't just go down. It would probably take you a day or two to travel, 2 miles? Because of the different terrains, these hills. And as I say, they were so built in, one or two of them, that they did hold you up. And eventually we got down after taking these 1 or 2 hills and what have you. We got down to within Well, you could see the entrance to these tunnels. There's two tunnels that went through, and the object was to capture them. And we climbed right to the top of this ridge, and we were going down the top of the ridge, and B Company was in front of us, and they got held up with one or two chaps, and they called for artillery support from our own people who were down on the front where we were originally, and I should never forget this even. You heard these shells coming over and exploding in front of us, and all of them heard of somebody shout, "Stop them bloody guns, they're only shelling B Company." And we had the unfortunate job of taking the place of B Company, and we moved through them, and I've never seen anything like it. Bodies, arms hanging in the trees and what have you. And I think B Company there, I think they lost about 20 men killed, about 40 wounded. And you're talking about 60 people out of a company of 150 strong, perhaps. You know, it's a big loss. But, and it's a wonder the Japs didn't attack us at that particular time, because we were, everybody was confused, weren't they? You know, I mean, you've got a B Company laying about all over the place, and we were moving through.
What had actually happened with the artillery?
Well, somebody had made a mistake with the range of them. They must have done. And that's recorded even in our own battalion book. It tells you there, I think, how many of them was lost.
So what happened as your C Company moved through their positions?
Well, we took up fresh positions just past them. We dug in. And that's as far as we went, actually. Because then Kohima was going to start.
So you could see the tunnels from this position you were in. Could you describe the tunnels for me?
Well, you couldn't. I can't, because we were on top. And what, 600-700 yards in front of us, you could see it was a cut in where you could just see the brickwork or whatever it was of the tunnel itself, and I think the Japs had used it as a supply base. You know, being in the tunnels, everything was there, and that's why they were trying to keep it. But I think if we'd have been, well, I know that the day we moved out, the next day, the people who took over, they captured the tunnel, so we were that close to them.
Had they been attempting with your unit to move you over the tunnels, or to attack directly onto them?
Well, we were over the top at that particular time, because you could look down to the entrance of it, you know.
Had you seen much of the Japanese at that stage?
Not really. We'd done one or two flanking movements, we occupied a hill, and a couple of three chaps tried to come up onto the hill, and we were able to see, well, we killed two or three of them, actually. Most of our casualties there was for the odd shelling, you know, mortar shell and what. Because, as I said, they'd send a shell over as soon as if you got on the top of a hill, they'd line it up. They knew the range of that straight away. And you got casualties like that.
Would you say that they were very accurate in their mortaring?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were. Because as I say, they were really thorough, I would think, because they'd been there some time, and their method of occupying these little hills and then withdrawing, it seemed as though they got the range completely right before they move off, you know. And it was terrifying, really. You had to really get off. And of course, trying to, if you had a patrol go up, I mean, you, if they were on there, they'd drop a couple of grenades or whatever over, and you had to withdraw.
What size of patrols would you send up onto the hills?
Section, 5 men, 6 men, something like that. But it's only a light patrol just to find out if they're there. I mean, you wouldn't, I don't know whether you would even take a Bren gun. It was just a matter of patrol out.
Did you do any of the patrolling yourself?
I didn't personally, no. Although this B Company episode, I did go out with a couple of chaps along one of the paths towards the tunnels, and I never found anything except a couple of dead bodies of our own people. But it had been caught in an ambush or whatever, and just reported back. But no, I never actually went out on patrols being a sergeant. Mostly it was corporals going out, you know, with that.
Would you organise the patrolling?
Yeah.
Could you tell me how that works within like the command structure of the unit? Would an officer come to you?
Well, not so much there, but the company commander would get his orders from battalion headquarters, and he would call these officers together, the platoon commanders, and they would tell you, they would get their orders, and then they would call the NCOs together and tell us what was happening. And my job was to make certain they got ammunition, grenades, and their, you know, make sure they got a water bottle and their rations. And later on, when the, what they called the B echelon, when we were mules, it was my job as Sergeant Major then to look after all the mules and what have you. And I can tell you a little instance of that later on. So being a Sergeant Major, you had a responsibilities, but you weren't actually in the front line as such. At Coima we were, obviously, because you had nowhere else to go. But with these mules, you were responsible for the loading of the mules. Well, not the muleteers were responsible for loading them, but you had to make certain you got enough ammunition and what have you.
With the patrolling, would some men have an aptitude for it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. At one particular stage, we later on, this was going down towards Rangoon, you're talking about aptitude. A report came in that there was X amount of chaps in the chowl, and we sent out a patrol. This bloke volunteered. He said, "I'll go," he said, "I want a chap sword," he said. And he came back with one. And that's the sort of attitude of some of the people. They didn't care. But it's a good job you had them.
So you were at the tunnels. Were you a sergeant major at that point?
No, I was a sergeant. No. Going down towards the tunnels, in amongst all these hillocks, our regimental sergeant major, RSM, company sergeant major of the headquarter company, and a couple of other, they all got are killed or wounded in the process of going down. And then in the field, they promoted people in the field straight away. They were taken, or they were a loss to the battalion. So somebody took the place of the RSM and I took the place. But I was able to stop with C Company. They promoted me from sergeant to company sergeant major in the field. And I took over straight away. And that was on the way to the tunnels.
And did your job change with that? You mentioned it had changed slightly to deal with the mules.
Yeah. Because the mules come under company headquarters. And from being a platoon sergeant to a company sergeant major, general altogether, I had to keep a record of all the men. You know, if anybody's wounded or sick or whatever, taken away. I had to keep a record. There's nobody else. In when you're in peacetime or in what they, you'd have your own company secretary, but I had to do all that. Apart from the ammunition and all the supplies, and I can tell you a little bit more about that later on, where we when we were advancing towards Rangoon. I'd harboured up. I'll tell you about that later. Anyway,